To quote one of my favorite sitcom stars, Jerry Seinfeld, here's the quote. According to most studies, people's number one fear is public speaking. Number two is death. Death is number two. Does that sound right? This means to the average person, if you go to a funeral, you're better off in the casket than doing the eulogy. That is one heck of a quote. And unfortunately, it seems to be true. Studies show that 75% of the population actually fear public speaking. So if you think of about 300 million folks in the US, that means I'm in this weird select group of about 75 million who don't fear getting up on a stage or in front of a group and speaking. And this made me wonder, why is that? And I wanted to share some techniques and strategies that I use when I do public speaking, because to be honest, it's not as scary as most people think. Hi, I'm Katie O, and the host of Curious Katie O, a podcast where we talk about topics I'm curious about, ask questions, try to understand. The topics tend to be super random because so am I in terms of my thinking and learning and what I'm interested in. So if you like this style, I'd encourage you to subscribe and share what you're curious about. I'm not sure I remember the first time I did any public speaking, but growing up with grandparents who were in politics, this was more the norm than the exception. The ability to share an idea or influence a group, whether large or small, was something I pretty much saw on a regular basis growing up. The older I got, the more I realized that while there were some masters and wizards who could get up on stage and captivate an audience, oftentimes it was just regular people that may or may not have good ideas that found the courage to step on stage and people actually listened. I'm sure we can all think of a few that can just get up on stage and you're captivated by whatever they say. And the funny thing is, for everybody, it's a different type of person. And there's a lot of people that get paid just to get up and speak and share their story. So let's dig into that. You know, when I started my career, you were expected to get up and speak constantly. I worked for a company that had customer visits multiple times a week where you'd have groups of 5 to 10 people, often leaders or key decision makers in their company, that you would have to speak to. Maybe 30 minutes, maybe 45, maybe an hour. And you had to be captivating and informative because you were part of the sales process. Or you had to get up in front of the executive leadership team and all their staff circling around every month for project updates. And there were a few times I had to communicate as a 22-year-old to this room full of seasoned, high-paid individuals and convince them of a decision that we made or an idea that we had or a direction that we were going. And I wasn't spared from tough questions due to my age, and I learned a cadence and a timing, along with being able to, here's the key, think and talk at the same time. And these things are techniques that I still use today. I use the cadence of my language and the timing of my pauses to give me a minute to think while I'm talking. That's the first secret. But I remember when my husband had to give a best man speech, and I think a lot of, you know, the fear that comes from techniques that people think actually help but actually hurt them. It's this idea of, I'm fearful, so I'm going to do these things. And in doing those things, you actually make it worse. You know, first he wanted to write out his whole speech and memorize it. Love the idea. But having been in these situations before, I quickly talked him out of that approach, because you're in a room full of people, and if you miss a word or get distracted, jumping back to where you left off can be nearly impossible if you memorize something in order. So instead, what we did is we worked on 4 to 5 themes he wanted to cover. We wrote them down, and he talked through how he wanted to go about each one. We worked on wording and what to include or omit. Then the magic step that people who see speakers don't realize is the key: practice. Lots and lots of practice. He gave me that speech so many times, I probably could have given it 10 times over, over and over again. So when he got up to give it to the wedding guests, he killed it with the right pauses, humor, stories, wording. He wasn't worried about reading or memorizing it, and it sounded 100% natural, like he thought it up on the spot. I've worked with many people who struggle to get in front of a group or room of people, and I find that there are 3 common reasons why. First, they don't believe they're interesting enough and don't think anyone would want to hear their story. Second, they don't think they're charismatic, whatever that means. And because they don't sound exactly like someone else either they admire or they think is really good at speaking, they don't think they can do it. And finally, they don't know how to put pieces together to tell a story that's interesting. And when they try, it sounds forced or awkward. So I thought we'd take a minute to just break down each one of these, because I will challenge that there's a way that you could do each one of these. Let's break down each one of these, because I will challenge you to identify that these are not that overwhelming and not that scary. I'm going to start with this. First, everyone is interesting. I bet somewhere under the surface or buried deep is an interesting story or perspective or hobby or interest or experience that you have that's unique to you. Maybe you knit hats for your cat. That's interesting to a group of people. Or you're passionate about the Roman Empire, which I found out is like some guy thing that they think about all the time. Like, who knew that? Maybe you've had a bunch of different jobs in your career and the path you took is unlike anyone else's. But here's the secret. When I give a presentation on a topic, it fits with the request or the information of the audience, but I 100% do it for me. You know, I don't want to hit the road and be a real comedian, although there are moments where if you were to ask me, like, what's the craziest job I would ever want, it would be a stand-up comedian, which seems like a lot of fun, but a lot of chaos. So I give, instead of that, corporate-level funny and engaging presentations that I enjoy, that I get to do on my own schedule. And if the audience comes along for the ride, that's great. You know, I share flaws and mistakes along with things I've learned. I've delivered presentation to rooms of 25 high school kids or 400 professionals in my industry. And I'm not super interesting. I just like sharing stories and talking about my journey or my experience and sharing things that I think are funny. And so I've done personal conversations. I've done general topics. And I've done things that I'm an expert on. I've done things that I've experienced. I've done things I've had to research and figure out. And for me, getting over this idea of I'm not interesting, and look at it this way, I'm having fun and other people find that interesting. Go figure. The second thing that people worry about is they're not charismatic. Okay, maybe you're not. Did you know that most comedians are actually more introverted and awkward offstage, no matter their persona or how they captivate people while they're on stage? And I would say I'm probably similar to this. I'm not one to introduce myself to everyone in the room. You know, sometimes I struggle to say hi and talk to strangers, but I can get up on stage and make people laugh or learn something. And so you might be asking, like, why is that? Because I am who I am on stage. I am who I am in real life. I'm sarcastic. I use self-deprecating humor. I'm flawed. I'm real. And I'm not like anyone else who would come up before or after me, because I'm me. And so it doesn't necessarily need to be about charisma. It needs to be about authenticity and being true to who you are. You know, I often see people when I worked at different companies, and they would see somebody present who is really good. And they would turn to me and go, oh my gosh, I wish I could be just like them, or I wish I could present just like them. And my response back to them usually was centered around this idea that if they want to be somebody they're not, they're totally going to fail because it won't be believable. You know, the reality is you have to find your voice, your cadence, your way of speaking. If you try to be someone else, the audience totally knows. You know, they are in that room really to hear you, not you playing a version of somebody else. And the only way you get to find your style is by figuring out who you are and doing it a bunch of times. I'm a lot better speaker now than I was in my 20s, and I hope in my 50s I'll be a better speaker than I am in my 40s. You know, I follow a bunch of comedians, a wide range of comedians, and I'm guessing if you were to listen to Bill Burr, Nate Bargatze, Cat Williams, or Tom Segura mixed with a little Jim Gaffigan and Jerry Seinfeld, you would find that they each have their own style, voice, cadence, words that they use, their own level of charisma, because they each have their own voice and talk that's matched to them. So before you worry about charisma, before you worry about trying to be somebody that you're not, I would just say figure out who you are in real life. And if you do have to give a talk, be that. Be that with purpose, with cadence, with your voice. And you'll find out what that looks like for you. And you might be surprised that charisma is not at the top of that list. All right, finally, you might have no clue how to put a speech or a story together. So that's true. A lot of politicians have speechwriters, actors deliver lines that somebody else had written. You know, a lot of the people that we see on stage, we see the output of a lot of time pulling pieces together to tell a larger story. And it's not easy. You know, have you ever seen somebody stand up and do comedy where they start the beginning of their overall storytelling with a little bit of a snippet? And then at the end, they tie it together. That wasn't an accident. They did that on purpose. So I'll break down how I do it, because there is a process that you can create to figure out your storytelling method. So I put an outline together on pieces or experiences that I want to share. Usually post-it notes, it's usually random because it allows me to move things around. But I just have a general sense based on the topic of what are some things that I could cover or what are some experiences that relate to this that I could share. Then I work through what ties all these together. So I try to find a theme or something that's similar or some way to connect the dots on all of these pieces. Then I try to find a way to introduce the idea that's relatable, and I'll start putting my slides together. So what do I mean by this? I recently did a presentation on Are Leaders Born or Made? And I started the presentation by putting up some images of some kings and played up this idea of, you know, there's a reason that we don't really have kings running things anymore, because birthright doesn't always mean you're the best person for the job. And so it was breaking down this idea of you're not necessarily born a leader. That idea is antiquated and not something that we relate to today. So I found a way to make it relatable. I don't do a lot of words on my slides. Sometimes I'll have only one or two or three words or a one sentence theme. And I spend a lot of time on my notes. Why do I do that? Because it gives me flexibility in the moment. It gives me flexibility to add a story or take a story away. Gives me ability to introduce something from a conversation I had earlier that day. It also makes sure that they're not reading my slides, that they're watching me. And so from that perspective, your notes become the key part. Then I add elements or pictures, or I refine my stories to help make a point. And similar to the story I told you earlier, I practice and tweak and practice and tweak. I actually will come home and do it alone, kind of like I'm doing this podcast right now, where I'm talking out loud to myself to deliver this. And what I try to do is do it enough times, so I will time my cadence. I'll time if I have an interactive spot. I'll make sure I'm within the 45 minutes or an hour. If things aren't working right or aren't worded right for me, I'll take them out. I'll change things. Some ideas like, oh, I have to totally tell this story. It just doesn't work. I take it out. The practice and the tweaking is where you actually get the presentation that feels like it's natural, but it's not. So I'll have the outline done about 1 to 2 months before I deliver anything. And I might change it up until the night before, depending on what's going on or depending on what, you know, stories or information I want to tell. And the biggest reason I do that is because jokes or stories that sound good in my head oftentimes don't connect when I actually speak them out loud. Or I read them out loud and I go, well, I understand what that means, but I don't think anybody else will. Ideas I wanted to share, I will scratch those if they don't help me, even if it's a good story or one that I think is funny or engaging. If it doesn't work, I get it out. And the one thing I often tell people when they're doing a presentation for the first time, and I will put a PS on this, with any audience, the first time you speak out loud on your presentation should never be in front of that audience, especially if that audience matters. So if you're doing your presentation for the first time, it's like the first night a comedian does new material. They do not tape their specials on the first night. I always used to tell people this when they would give a presentation for the first time and say, oh, that didn't go well, or I didn't like it, or I want to change stuff. Great. Comedians tape their specials after a year on the road. doing hundreds of shows and adjusting the wording to get the laugh and the gasp just right. You know, a lot of times I'll do a presentation for a year, give or take. I'll do it to multiple audiences. I'll do it in multiple ways, multiple venues, different approaches. And then once I have it and I've got the timing and the notes and everything, I can put that in my archive and I can pull it out anytime I want. I've worked through how to tell my examples, how to introduce something funny, how to engage the audience. And the biggest piece is how to remove the fat and excess that I don't need. So when you think about putting your presentation together, think about it in chunks. You know, what is the main story I'm trying to tell? What are the building blocks or the pieces of that story that'll help me tell it? And then how do I practice it and work on it until it really connects with me so then I can connect with the audience? Okay, so you've decided that you're interesting, you're charismatic in your own way, and you wrote something down to deliver that's witty or inspiring or educational. Congratulations, you are halfway there. Now you actually have to get up in front of people and share it. And this is where people start to opt out. You know, the funny thing is when it comes to doing something that fills you with anxiety or dread or fear, the emotions you feel or that feeling in your stomach is actually the same as excitement and courage. And you might be going, that's totally not true. So I learned this from an interview with Olympic athletes where the news reporters kept asking them if they were worried or scared. You know, you've worked your whole life for this moment. You're going to run a 100-meter dash. It'll be over in a couple of seconds. You know, are you fearful? Are you nervous? And the athletes kept saying that they were excited. Same feelings, different mindset. Does my stomach get a few butterflies? Sure. Can I tell that I'm closing out, you know, any questions or distractions to run over things in my head ahead of time? Yeah, because I ignore people around me. So I'm like, hey, I need to not talk to you. I can tell I'm trying to figure out things in my head before I get up there. Yeah, I tune people out. Am I excited? Yeah. You know, I'll share a recent story I had about, we'll call it a surprise presentation adjustment, which anybody who knows, whenever that happens, the thing that you're most nervous about is not the presentation, but your tech. I had, and I'll share with you my mindset or my approach. So I had the chance in 2023 and again this year to present at a national conference for women in the roofing industry. It brings together, you know, 500 to 600 people, part of this huge organization. And I was one of the speakers during the segment so they can pick what they want to choose. The prior year, I had a presentation on notes pages because they said in the room, you don't have projectors. And they set up the table, so I got in there a little early. So I was expecting about 50 people. And I had more than double that. People were crammed in. I had people sitting on the floor. I had people bring in chairs, all to hear me talk. What? So that was surprising and flattering. So this year I had the chance to talk again. Similar style room, but with a projector and a presentation. So I put some things together that would help lead me through the conversation. And I'm getting ready, setting up my tech, making sure all my clickers work. And at the last minute, the chairwoman came in and asked if I would be willing to go to the main stage and present because so many people wanted to hear my talk. So the main stage is where the keynote gave her presentation, and it's like 300 to 400 people wanted to see me. So there are those moments where you're like, what? Okay. So my initial reaction was sure, you know, like, all right, let's go. And I was more worried about the tech than anything. So I got up there and I'm like, okay, can I plug it in? Does my clicker work? And they gave me a stage and a microphone. I'm like, all right, let's go. And so I'm up on this stage up in front of, you know, 300 or 400 people. And I'm giving this presentation that I had created on the two screens, and I have a screen in front of me. It's a whole different setup, something I had never practiced or anticipated doing. So I start with a joke. So the joke was we were supposed to have theme songs as we got up on stage. And I couldn't figure out what a theme song for me would be. You know, my team at work calls me Slim Katie because I grew up in Detroit. And so they say I have a little bit of an Eminem vibe or style in terms of my attitude and sometimes my language, good or bad. But I didn't think that was appropriate for this group. So I started with the joke, and this is the joke. We had to do walk-up music, and we had to identify what that was. So I did what any good wife and mother would do. I asked my husband and my son what my walk-up music should be. And then I played it and I held the microphone next to my phone that had the song playing. And it was the Imperial March from Star Wars, the Darth Vader song. And everybody laughed. And then I was off. And so, you know, the microphone I had in my hand, you know, I was waving my arms because I do move when I talk and I do, you know, expressive kind of style. I'm a little bit more like Sebastian Maniscalco in terms of how he does his comedy. So I move and I talk and I've got the microphone and I'm giving my talk and I share my experiences and then I have them work in groups. So then I hopped off the stage and I'm taking the microphone around and I would walk up to people at tables when they got done with their exercise and go, great, why don't you share a little bit? And I call on people. I wouldn't wait for people to raise their hand. I would just walk up to a table and say, great, who scribed for you? All right, share a couple of your ideas. And part of the reason I did that is because people get so nervous about sharing that nobody raises their hand and it brings your entire presentation to a halt. Why do I know that? Because I've done a lot of these. And so by going up to people and just having them share when they don't have time to think about it, they told great stories or great ideas. And to me, I got a lot of laughs along the way and I had a blast and it was an hour and it flew by. And so afterwards, I got a ton of compliments. I got called famous. I'm totally putting that in quotes, by the way, by some people who were in the audience that came up to me later at trade shows or events. I had people, you know, 2 weeks ago come up to me and was like, oh, I saw you present. You were famous. This was so great. And it's really awkward because I don't think of myself even remotely as that. But it's a way that they go, hey, I connected with you. I remember you. And to me, it goes a long way to make an impression in my company, helps to open doors. It connects me with people and our customers. It's flattering and it's crazy. Because it's my stories and experiences. And while they're unique to me, you know, what I find is that a lot of people have similar stories. And I know what buttons to push and what stories to tell to make it relatable. I know how to share the things that not only worked well, because yeah, people want to hear that. Hey, what works? But part of what finding out what works is by sharing when you totally blew things up. And so to be able to get up on stage and talk about that, you know, I talk about how there's no way I should be standing on a stage with a microphone if you look at every metric that I had in school or measure of charisma on an extroverted scale. You know, I was, and I kind of joke about this, but I had the chance in eighth grade to be the dumbest kid in the smart kid classes. And I took it. And I went to college and I graduated with like a 2.5 overall. And I think like a 3.4, 3.5 just in my major in marketing, because obviously that clicked and the other stuff didn't. And I'm not a super extrovert. I'm probably closer to an ambivert, where sometimes I like to be extroverted, but sometimes I don't. And my experiences are not game changing. I didn't, you know, found like a company like Facebook or Microsoft. But for whatever reason, people connect with my stories and here I am. And it's one of the things I enjoy most about my job. You know, public speaking is like anything else. If you want to do it, you can. And if you want to get good at it, you have to be intentional and you have to practice. And I would encourage you to think about a way that you can overcome your fear of public speaking if that's something that freaks you out. And it really comes down to two things: change the way you prepare and change your mindset. You know, my son and I were talking about fear and something he was afraid of. I think we're both afraid of heights. So I think we were talking about that. And we were talking about it relative to roller coasters. And he's like, but mom, you still go on roller coasters. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, but you're afraid of them. I go, yeah. And I told him that everyone is afraid, period, the end. Anybody you meet, anybody you see has some fear in there because we're all human beings. But those who are courageous choose to do it anyway. So when you think about doing things that you're fearful of, don't assume that the people who get up on stage don't share some of those same like trepidations and concerns. They just choose to do it anyway. And I'm not saying that if I had to go on TV or deliver a speech to 10,000 people, it wouldn't freak me out a little bit more. You know, I did have to do an internet TV interview with Kathy Ireland, the former supermodel. And initially I thought it was going to be intimidating and it was a really great conversation. We had a good time. And so it was one of those things that, you know, I might be afraid if I had to get up in front of 10,000 people and deliver a speech, like who wouldn't be? But my courage and my excitement would overcome my fear. You know, when you think about it, choices are the only things you can really control when it comes to public speaking or a thousand other things in life. you know, make a choice to step on stage and pick up a microphone and see what happens. To give another nod to Jerry Seinfeld, here's a quote from his. He said, being a good husband is like being a good stand-up comic. You need 10 years before you can even call yourself a beginner. So cut yourself some slack. That's from somebody who's been doing it his whole life. And he's, you know, 10 years in before you move away from that beginner status. So don't feel like you have to get it day one. And I'll quote another stand-up comedian who's a little bit on the different spectrum than Jerry Seinfeld, Cat Williams. He said, success is not determined by what you have, but what you are willing to give up. Are you willing to give up your fear of doing something and prepare to do it and not worry about the first time or the 10th time or the 100th time and be okay if you're a beginner for a while, knowing that you're just trying to do something new and different and taking the courageous step to not be afraid of speaking to other people. Thanks so much for listening. If this is a topic you're interested in hearing about, or there are other topics you want me to talk about, you know, connect with me on Instagram or email me at curious_kdo@gmail.com. Until next time, I can't wait to hear what you're talking about.